I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. If it's your first time tuning in, welcome to the show. This is the show where I talk to actors and make them tell me hysterical and sad and interesting stories from their career. I've been on a break from the show for a little bit. I did a lot of interviews at the start so that I could just crank them all out. And now I'm back doing more, gonna do the same thing. I thought that maybe times would be a change in a little bit, but it looks like we're kind of in the same spot, if not worse. So stay home, wear your mask, and just be kind to one another. It's a difficult time right now. I know everybody's going through it. But yeah, let's continue to stay home and wear our masks and save lives. It's pretty easy. Just wear a mask. You do it. It's literally the easiest thing you can do. Today on the show, we have Wesley Taylor. You may know him from Indoor Boys, Smash, or maybe you saw him on Broadway in SpongeBob SquarePants as Plankton. We had a great time, and here's that conversation. And hello to Wesley.
Hello.
How are you today?
It was like mid-sip of my water. I almost choked and died at the beginning of the thing.
Oh. Great. That's going to be the interview where I killed a Broadway star. Fantastic.
Hello, Jillian.
Oh, no. How are you other than the water?
You know, that question, how are you lately has been tricky.
It has. It's been bad.
every day is a new adventure.
An adventure within the four walls of the apartment.
In my mind, yeah.
Yeah. Are you quarantined with anyone at least?
Yeah, my fiance, Isaac Powell, we're staying with his family in Greensboro, North Carolina. And this is where I've been since Broadway was shut down. And West Side was, you know, he was in West Side Story and I was in Assassin's off Broadway. And so both of our shows got shut down and we fled pretty immediately down here.
It's pretty smart. It got really bad up there.
Yeah. Where are you?
I'm in LA, so it's nice. Awful out here right now.
Well, sure, but at least you have, you know, the sun and...
Yeah, I have the sun and I have a backyard, which is nice.
Yeah. That's how I feel about North Carolina. There's a backyard here, there's lots of green, there's lots of space and air, and so it's better than...
Than just the small apartment.
Than the 500 square feet, yeah.
Yeah. I know some people out in New York who are going absolutely crazy. Yeah. They were just like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
Why? oh, my goodness. So take me back to the start of your career, because you've had like a crazy, amazing Broadway career. But how did you get that bug? How did you get the acting bug?
I don't know how I got the bug to perform, to be in front of people at an early age, mm-hmm. when I was a child. But it definitely bit me early. as early as I can remember, I wanted to be in front of people and make them laugh and have their attention. So that's like sort of my earliest memories. Mm-hmm. My mom was a music teacher, so music was a part of our life, and singing and piano lessons and that kind of stuff. So that, I mean, a song and dance kind of man, a presentational performance lifestyle was always the name of the game for me growing up. But then I wanted to be an actor in high school when, you know, I went to an arts high school I was just doing a lot of theater and school plays. And I think getting immersed in plays in high school, Shakespeare and falling in love with text and with being on stage as an actor, that's when that happened. And then yeah, I've been in New York for I went to drama school in North Carolina
School. I was gonna say, you went, yeah. Did you, so you went to college for it as well?
Yes. We at my arts high school, we had sort of Northeastern college tour every year. And you go and you see Juilliard and, you know, North Carolina School of the Arts and SUNY and, yeah, you know, NYU and all those places. So, and then after I graduated college, I moved to New York, and that was 12 years ago. And,
So you moved to New York, and did you know anybody? Were you immersed in it already? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I would go to New York quite a bit since I was a kid. You know, our family took trips to New York to see theater, and that was more because my parents actually met and fell in love in upstate New York, NYAC. And so they had ties here. They had connections, friends here that they wanted to visit, and then because I knew everything about Broadway, at an early age, I would like give my dad a list of the plays that we needed to see.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's amazing.
He'd be like, how did you find out about, like, who knew? And I was like, you need to see Laura Linney and Liam Neeson in The Crucible. we were seeing theater in New York from an early time, but I knew people who had graduated from the School of the Arts and alumni from my high school and from my college that were already in the city living and working.
So was that the goal then? Was New York like always in the back of your mind? Like, that's where I want to be?
Always. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
My
that's good.
Sort of adolescent dream of success was live in New York City with someone I love and be on Broadway. Like, that was the only thing that I dreamed about.
Wow.
So of course, when all that came true earlier than I ever dreamed it would happen, then I had to sort of make new dreams so that I wouldn't.
I was gonna say, you've made that happen already.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. When did you, so you get to New York, and then how long before Rock of Ages?
Well, so Rock of Ages off Broadway was a few months after graduation. So then it transferred about 2 months in, we got the news that we were moving to Broadway. And so about 6 months after graduating from drama school, I was on Broadway.
Does that even happen?
Well, you say no, but then the person I'm engaged to, it happened even faster too. So Isaac was cast in Once on This Island like a month after graduating.
That's so crazy to me. Like, just being straight out of college and then like, boom, dream job.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. It's pretty rare. And it doesn't come without its challenges too. But you can't really complain about it publicly. No. to anyone in your life. I mean, of course, Isaac had me, which was, you know, a benefit of dating someone who's been through that before.
Right.
I didn't have that. So
you just had to keep that all bottled up.
Right.
Really feed into the performances. So after Rock of Ages, what did you do then?
Well, I was cast in the Addams Family before I left Rock of Ages.
Okay.
So it went pretty much right into Addams Family. And that was a longer experience and admittedly a more arduous experience. Rock of Ages was just more like the thing that exceeded all of our expectations. Whereas the Addams Family just kept disappointing, but it was a long process because I was cast in the early development of it, the workshops. Yeah. And then we went to Chicago and did the 3-month out of town tryout. And then we went in Broadway. So all in all, it was about 2 years of my life, but, on Broadway for only a year.
I feel like people don't realize how long it takes to get a show on Broadway and like the many years, sometimes years, that it takes to get it workshopped correctly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it rarely happens very fast. I mean, the norm is like 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you know.
So. Right. Right. So, okay, you do Addams Family, and then is this when Smash comes about? Because I got to tell you, that was like my favorite show when it was on. I even went to the Actors Fund performance with my mom. Aww. Out in New York.
Yeah,
I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah, it was pretty soon after. It was pretty much on the heels of Addams Family. I think I did a couple more like regional things, and then I moved to LA. And then 2 weeks later I moved right back to do Smash.
Wait, so you moved out here for 2 weeks and then you got Smash?
Yeah, that's so I've moved to Los Angeles twice now in my life and have had to move back for jobs. The first time you know, I had just done Tales of the City and I think Little Miss Sunshine or something, and I was like, I think I felt like it was time to go west and try my luck, and then I was called in to Telsey to put myself on tape for this new show called Smash, and I didn't think much of it. I didn't put much eggs in that basket because I was so mentally like in LA, and I was already sort of you know, all packed up and put some stuff in storage, and I was fully ready for this new life, and I was going in for call, but the days leading up to going to the airport and moving to LA. And then I was in LA and they were putting me on hold for this part. And then they released me a week later and they were like, you know what? We've decided, you know, they cast Leslie Odom Jr. in this part. And they were like, but there's a smaller role that we're now considering you for. And so it was just this like whirlwind because I was released and I didn't get it. And then the next day I was on hold again for Bobby. And then a week later I was moving back to New York.
You had to move back to New York. That's amazing. Yeah, how was Smash? Because that show was so fun to watch and I can only imagine how fun it was to make it.
Yeah, it was overwhelming because I didn't have much experience on television before that. I was only in some commercials and a soap opera or something. So when I show up to this Steven Spielberg DreamWorks budget and, you know, Angelica Houston and Deb Messing are walking around and, you know, I was starstruck. I was really, really grateful and excited. And, but of course for any actor, when a job eventually becomes a job, inevitably you just like find things to complain about and be unhappy about. So it was only a matter of time before I was like, why is my part bigger? Why am I not doing it? You know, like, but yeah, the first few months, the honeymoon was just magical. And I remember being so fascinated by all the moving parts and how they collaborated with each other and just being so enamored by how a set works and how many hundreds of people have to be working in tandem for the same common goal. And I just fell in love with being on set and So it was a pretty wild time of my life. Yeah.
It's cool. I wish that show would come back. I truly loved it. I thought it was just the most inspiring show to watch as an actor.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, at the time, it was a strange thing to be a part of because it was obviously very exciting and thrilling. But we also, at the time, were sort of being hate-watched. Like, there was this culture of people watching the show where they just sort of made fun of it and
what?
Like, just kind of shit on it the whole time. So we were
gosh.
Well, it was just the sense that, like, this is so unrealistic. Like, this would never happen or whatever. We're like, yeah, it's TV. Like,
yeah, it's TV. It's like, it's supposed to be great. It's like all those TV shows that are like, yeah, we're going to add COVID to the storyline. I'm like, but why? We lived it. I want to escape from something. I want it to be fantastical.
You know, a surgeon isn't going to watch Grey's Anatomy or ER and talk about how accurate it is. It's the television show. So,
actually, I definitely have seen videos of like a surgeon watching Grey's Anatomy and being like, this is completely wrong.
Exactly. So it was just a crazy thing to be part of at the time. I definitely took it for granted or didn't really know what it was. At the time, we weren't being watched in great numbers. Like the first couple episodes were really watched, but then it really, you know, there's a reason we were canceled. So I think that the interesting thing is watching the legacy of the show and how people internationally have found it and how it's taken off as this cult favorite. Yeah. You know, years and years after it's been off the air, because it's only been off the air now for 8 years, but it's like everyone, I mean, I still get stopped. I still get, you know, recognized for Smash, and it's just such a wild thing that we didn't quite know what it was at the time.
It totally is one of those like cult classics, like in my mind. So you do Smash, which was amazing. And then how long after until you decided I'm going to make my own show with Indoor Boys?
Well, Indoor Boys is actually the third web series that I've put out. The first one was during the Addams Family when I was going a little crazy doing the 8 shows a week. You know, after the first few months of previews and opening and all that fun stuff, then it becomes a job. And I'm someone who gets pretty bored pretty easily. And I like the structure of a Broadway lifestyle, but at the same time, I need to be creatively stimulated. And I had this little YouTube series called Billy Green. And then after that, I took it more seriously. And I tried like a real narrative driven web series called It Could Be Worse. At the, you know, the budget sort of got a little better. I mean, like each thing I did, I put a little bit more time and effort and energy and money into. And then by the time It Could Be Worse had a following, and that obviously was probably more because I was on Broadway and visible than it was. I don't know if people were just organically finding it, but whatever, you know, however they were going to stumble across the content was irrelevant to me. I just wanted them to see it, and I was amassing sort of a following. And so as soon as that happened, I started crowdsourcing and raising money and trying to put more into the production of it all. And the second season of It Could Be Worse was acquired by Hulu. Then as soon as I started making money, you know, as a writer, I was like, okay, maybe I should start taking this seriously.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch.
And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
And then it was like, okay, then I started writing pretty regularly and trying to create more, and had a couple short plays published. And Indoor Boys was really sort of, Indoor Boys was born from basically a short play that I wrote that I was trying to sell as a TV show in LA. And I had sold a short form version of it as a digital concept. And we shot the pilot in LA, and we were shopping it around to MTV and stuff. And it just wasn't happening. And, and I was getting frustrated with the game.
And, yeah. I mean, as it happens.
Yeah. And whenever I'm creatively stifled or waiting around, the thing that will solve it in terms of my stuck nature of, you know, the thing that'll unlock, I guess, happiness and creativity is to just start something else. So I took this short play and I wrote like sort of a gay sequel to it, because the short play was about three girls, and I wrote a gay sequel to it, and I pitched it to Alex Wise, who was out in Los Angeles also shooting a soap opera. And I was like, do you want to shoot this as a standalone sketch and see if it's anything, like see if it's worth like exploring, if we should like make it the pilot of a new web series, or like maybe just have it a standalone sketch, whatever. And so one hot summer day in LA, Alex and I just shot this thing with our friend on camera and our friend on boom. And it was just four of us in an apartment, and
we
finished it. And we're like, wait, this is kind of cute. This is funny. And it feels like the beginning of a story. So we just kept it up. And then each season got a little bit more real, and we raised money from investors. And this last season, this last season has been out now for about 8 months, and has gotten us all kinds of lovely awards. And an Emmy nomination for Vian Cox, who plays my mother in the series, and has just been nominated for a supporting actress Emmy.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's nuts, and we're thrilled for her.
I mean, the show is great. I love it. I think you and Alex are like really incredible in it.
Thank you.
It's a good show. You guys should watch it. Whoever's listening to this, watch Indoor Boys.
Not TV. And also, we just moved all our content to YouTube as well, so you can catch it on YouTube.
There you go.
Indoor Boys.
Come on, kids on YouTube. Go watch the show.
All ages enjoy the show. I will say, we've gotten many a flattering review from elderly gay men.
Oh,
yeah,
a whole new demographic.
Oh yeah.
So you do Indoor Boys. You're out in LA, and then what? When does SpongeBob come into this? Because that's huge.
Well, that's why the second season of Indoor Boys is in New York. Because we were, I had just, I had just leased a new car like months prior. I was just
Bad luck with moving.
No, truly, I was just starting to really feel like an Angeleno and like getting really acclimated with my apartment in the Valley. And then I just got a call and it was, you know, Tina Landau being like, hey.
Wow.
And I didn't have the part yet. It was basically like they were doing a final reading before Broadway. You know, they had done this out of town in Chicago. And without me, with Nick Blamire as Plankton, and Nick decided not to move forward with the piece, and they were doing this final workshop, and she asked if I would participate in the workshop. It wasn't an offer for the Broadway show, but with the understanding that if I showed well, that it would mean, you know, it would mean that. So it was basically like a week long audition. In which in which everyone else had their offer for Broadway, and they were all like looking at me in the room, like good luck, you know. But I flew to New York just for that week and did this reading, and then I flew back to LA. And as soon as I landed, I got the call saying that I got the part, and then I had to move back to New York.
I think whenever you want something really bad, you should just fly to LA and then you'll get it.
You have to really commit, you know, you have to really believe that you're moving, not do it for the job, but do it like really believing that you're going to start a new life.
I'm going to try that next time.
Yeah, maybe you should.
Oh my goodness. And how long were you doing Plankton?
A year.
Wow.
I think we were on Broadway for just, shy of a year.
It's a good run.
Yeah. Well, we would have run longer, but we got kicked out by the development deal, the renovation plan that city council approved of. So it wasn't, I mean, genuinely we were breaking a million every week at the box office. So it wasn't going to close based on ticket sales.
Yeah.
It was really a matter of, you know, this renovation that was planned for the palace for this sort of underground mall situation, extenuation of the underground Rockefeller Center thing. And that was going to push the theater up, and they were going to like raise the actual theater from its basement. I don't really understand it, but it's been,
how is that possible?
But it's been sort of in the works for like 5 years or something. And I think they just somehow got approval from city council, like just at the wrong, you know, for us, just at the wrong time. And so every,
that's a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, American in Paris and Annie and like a lot of shows that were pre us came into the theater with the knowledge that they might get shut down. But people were just continually taking that chance. And then and we took the chance as well. And so then finally they were like, you have 8 weeks to get out.
Oh my God.
And so then suddenly we were closing, and there was no other real estate available to us at the time. There was no other Broadway house that was empty for us to move into. So it was just sort of a tragic thing.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have spent all this time working on this wonderful show, and you could go for so much longer, and then boom, it's like rug pulled out from under you.
We had like about 10 months of an actual run.
Wow.
After previews. So,
Maybe it'll come back. And I can see it finally.
Yeah. Well, you saw it on Amazon.
Oh, it's on Amazon?
It's $10 to download on Amazon.
Heck yeah. I'm going to do that tonight.
That wasn't, that was shot last fall in England. They got the whole cast together again, the original cast, with the exception of a couple people who couldn't do it, and they replaced them. But for the most part, it's the entire original cast. They flew us all to England. We shot it in a theater out in Plymouth, England. Yeah.
And Plymouth, England.
And they aired it on Nickelodeon in December. And
that's so cool.
Download it on Amazon.
Okay. I'm definitely doing that tonight.
Everyone should.
Okay. So the whole point of the show is that I like to make actors tell me stories about when they got their hearts broken. Do you have any stories like that?
Yeah, I think I misunderstood, because I thought that it was like audition or stage mishaps or like falls and accidents and things like that.
It could also be that.
Okay, well, I've got plenty of those stories. But I also, you know, now that you worded it this way, like heartaches and stuff, I've definitely been I mean, yeah, I've been in the business long enough to be replaced and fired and all the things. I did a lot of development on this show called A Minister's Wife. That was, it was basically a musical interpretation of Candida, George Bernard Shaw's play. And it was at Lincoln Center. And I really loved the part and I really loved the play. And I was the only one in the cast that was replaced from that.
Oh, no.
I was 22. So that one was the first taste of, of that game. I was replaced from American Psycho after about a year of development on that. I did a 4-week lab which, you know, the creative team told me I was irreplaceable.
Of course they did.
And then I was replaced.
Of course.
I was replaced after 2 years of development on Nerds, which we all know didn't end up seeing the Broadway lights. But
I was going to say, what even is that?
Nerds was a show that was developed for about 10 years and it was slated to move to Broadway. And then right before they moved into the house to tech, the investors pulled out some key funding and the show never made it to Broadway. But I had write a first refusal.
I was going to say, so you left the show.
Yeah, I had so much protection in the development of the show and I was like Bill Gates for so much of that development. And then,
oh my gosh.
And then they replaced me.
Wow.
They told me they needed a celebrity. And then they replaced me with Rory O'Malley, which, I mean, he's a theater celeb, I guess, but it was just like my friends, Rory, you know, like my...
Yeah.
But
like you said, he's like a theater celeb. It's not like they bring in like Rory, friggin' Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, like Rory and I have discussed this at length. Like he had a showbiz podcast and we've actually talked about our Nerds experience before. But I've had plenty of these moments, you know, it's very much... par for the course. If you're going to be an actor, then you're going to have to deal with these moments and they suck. Especially, I mean, it just sucks to have your show closed. It sucks to be, you know, I was a week and a half into Assassins and coronavirus shut me down, you know, like there is constant disappointments in this business. And I think maybe more of a fun story to share is a mishap for you.
Oh, okay. Give me a mishap.
Okay. So... one time in SpongeBob, I am supposed to march down the center aisle of the house with these big metal cymbals that I, as Plankton, am sort of, you know, I'm crashing these cymbals. And and I'm marching wildly down the aisle. And one night, the grip on my left cymbal comes loose and watch this big heavy metal cymbal fly up into the air in what looks to me like slow motion and come down and land on the face of like a 14-year-old girl and like split her face open, like blood.
Oh my god.
She got like totally assaulted by the cymbal. Immediately, you know, I see it in slow motion. I'm like paralyzed. I'm like, you have several options right now. Like, do you continue on stage and act like that didn't happen? Do you run and find like security or like,
yeah, like what is the option right then?
So what I decided to do, I mean, like I just like obviously dropped character and ran right up to her. And I was like, are you okay? Do you need me to get someone? What, you know? And she was like, holding her face in her hands, crying, and she was like, oh, I'm okay. And I just like went back on stage in like terror, and I looked over my shoulder, and her whole family is like getting up and walking out of the aisle.
Oh no.
Walking up and out of the house. And so I'm terrified. I think that, you know, I'm going to get fired. Nickelodeon's going to get sued. Right. Like, it's going to be this big thing. And, you know, I just burst into tears afterwards.
Oh,
I was
so
traumatized by like killing this girl. Like I almost decapitated this teenager. And then afterwards, you know, company management told me that I think house managers had like comped their tickets and gave them lots of merchandise and like, you know, tried to appease them as best as possible. And they were really good sports. But It's a really scary time. I tried to reach out to the girl, but they wouldn't let me for liability reasons or whatnot. But
that makes sense.
It was just a kind of traumatizing night for me.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine.
The scene, Ethan Slater's eyes widened in terror when, I mean, everyone was just like, what just happened?
Oh my God. I can't even imagine something like that happening in the middle of a performance.
Well, yeah.
Oh God. That poor girl.
When you do something long enough, I mean, there's always going to be the flubbed lines and the blanks and the falls and things, which are always funny. And, are more funny the longer you've been doing the show.
Yeah.
Because it just brings joy whenever the sort of machine interrupts.
Breaks down, yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm so happy that I got to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks.
What is your social media? Where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram as Sir Wes Tate. and I'm on Twitter as West Tete. So West Tete on Twitter and Sir West Tete on Instagram. Because Instagram like demands respect. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the Sir West Tete. I think that's better. what's next? Are you going to, like, what's going on after quarantine? Yeah. What do you think you're going to do?
This week I start work on the Two Princes podcast, which is for Gimlet. It's a queer young adult period scripted musical podcast.
Fun.
Yeah. So right now it stars Noah Galvin and Ariel Statchel and has lots of fun people like Samira Wiley and Cynthia Revo and Christine Baranski and lots of and lots of fun people on the show. So I play a new prince named Prince Darling. Start work on that later this week. And Alex and I write every day. I mean, we just pumped out a new play. So we're sort of we've been doing some virtual readings and working on that. But yeah, for the most part, Isaac and I are just taking our cue based on, you know, which show comes back first.
Right. Yeah.
If they do come back, you know, we just got a new puppy, so we're it's a little I mean, thank God we've had this puppy to take some of our attention away
totally
the world burning down, but at the same time it does make things a little challenging in terms of you know, where to live now. Because, you know, we our lease is up next week next month in New York, and so we're like, do we head west until we find out what's happening with our shows?
You know that if you do that, they're gonna come back next week.
Exactly. So maybe we should do that.
Yeah, maybe you should.
We're just trying to take it day by day, and we have these like large life conversations every day, but it's really your guess is as good as ours.
Yep, it's true.
Yeah. So.
Oh goodness. All right. Well, thank you so much, Wesley. It's so nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
All right.
With everything.
You too.
All right.
Thanks again to Wesley for coming on the show. Tune in next week when I talk to Naomi Grossman from American Horror Story, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it now. You can also follow us on social media and tell your friends, tell your dog, tell your cat, your goat. If you have a goat, please send that goat to me because I would love to see it. Not physically send it to me, but please send me pictures because I love goats. And as always, thanks for coming in.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.